This podcast is part of Podcast One Sportsnet.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. Ira Weintraub here once again with the real host of the show, Coach Jim Harbaugh, Coach Jack Harbaugh, plus Director of Recruiting Matt Dudek is here. McKinsey, our producer, is here as well. We're going to catch up on some Michigan football news and notes. We'll get to our Lucky Sports Parents feature this week with Mike Morris, who's the dad of Mike Morris. And then we're going to wrap up with a Bowling Green and dental hygiene-filled edition of Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. A reminder to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen via the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com. And please follow us and contact us on Twitter at AED Podcast.
So, must be a good one. The Jack Talk must be good today because Dad's got the thumbs up over there. He's got the chin bob.
We have learned a lot.
He feels confident.
We have not done it, Jack Talk, yet, have we?
It's coming. I have a feeling we're going to learn a lot. I have a gut feeling we're going to learn a lot.
I can tell by his look. He's got a smile there. He's got something.
That's good, though. What do you call that, a tease?
That is a tease. That is correct.
You know, those people that kind of go through the opening, then they go through the talk with the parent, and then they cut off Jack Talk. You might want to stay tuned to the Jack Talk today.
Yeah, educational. very educational. Coach, one thing that we talked about on the podcast last week was that Pro Day was coming, so you had it this past Friday.
Yeah.
It's a great turnout. Obviously, every team was represented. Sounds like your guys did really well, and I heard a comment that I just wanted a little clarification from you. So you mentioned it to us that Wilton Spate was coming back. He was going to do some throwing.
Mm-hmm.
They were asking him who would have been doing the throwing if he wasn't here. So a lot of speculation. Would that have been you?
Yeah, that would have been me. would have had to have stepped up. Yeah, we didn't have a draft eligible quarterback this year, so Wilton expressed wanting to come back, so that was perfect. You know, guy who's won a lot of games here for us, and it was great to see him back on campus. And he threw the ball really well.
He's looking great. He lost about 20 pounds.
Yeah,
he ran like a 4.86 or something, which he was very pleased with.
First thing I told him when I saw him was like, "Oh, you finally listened."
you know what?
Remember. He had the butt, and he had the little pooch belly, and I was like, come on, man. I mean, you got to be more svelte, move around better. And now he walked in the door exactly
There are several players that I haven't seen for like 4 or 5 months, players that are in the draft and players who are coming back for draft day. Yeah. They walked in here last week. I have never seen them looking better.
Yeah.
You know, it's taken like 2 or 3 years for everything to kind of click in, and maybe with the pros knocking on the door, they look at things a little differently. I don't know.
The obvious comment to interject there is, I mean, why not do that, you know, from the beginning? Why not do that each and every year, you know? But I think there are some guys that think that's the biggest thing. You know, they how they do on their pro day, and that's a piece, but it's not the biggest. It's not the thing that's going to change what you've done throughout your college career and your what you did actually on the field. But human nature, right? It's like, well, they don't have to do it till they have to do it. You know, why wait till the last minute? Because it only takes a minute. Better to just do it right from the beginning. With that same motivation.
It's kind of like you mentioned last week about Jack.
Mm-hmm.
I was there the day that the game was over and you were coaching Jack a little bit, and he looked at you like, Dad, you're pushing me. You're pushing me too hard. And your retort was, that's what I'm here for.
That's my job.
That's my job. I think about some of the players are freshmen here, and you're trying to motivate them, and you're trying to tell them things that's best for them, and they give you, you're the coach, and you're pushing me. Then they graduate, and they go off into the real world and realize they want somebody to push them so they can get to that next level.
There's no question about it. My six-year-old, after his basketball game 2 weeks ago. Now, first of all, he loves sports. He likes playing got to throw him the ball. You got to shoot baskets with him. You know, you got to pass him the ball. I mean, he wants to be doing something at all times, soccer, football, basketball, whatever. And we're out there at the game, and he had a rough day. He only made one of seven shots. Game's over. He comes over to the bleachers. And the first thing out of my mouth was, you played hard. You played good and hard. Then I could see the tear coming rolling down. He goes, you're pushing me. You're the king pusher. I don't know where a six-year-old would come up with pusher, let alone the king pusher. But I go, you're right. I am going to push you. And that's what I'm here for. That's my job.
How many auto siblings does he
have? And when you shoot the ball off the backboard, softer. Softer. Yet I made at least four out of those six shots, had you just bounced it a little bit of touch off the backboard.
The thing I appreciated so much, being a part of that dialogue.
You were right there.
I was right there listening, but fans were walking out and parents were walking out. And here's a six-year-old. And they're all looking like, what's his response going to be?
Yeah.
Where is he going to go with this? Like,
oh, no, son, I don't push you.
No, I'm not pushing.
I don't want you to feel that way. Do you really feel like I'm pushing you?
That's not my
intent. That is the furthest thing from my mind.
I think the parents thought you were going to go there. And then when you kind of beat it up, yes, that's what.
You're darn right.
Everybody was taken aback somewhat.
I'm going to guess an older sibling or siblings, maybe King Pusher might have come from. It's a lot of times, right? An older sibling that probably was pushed just as hard by you might pass that along to a younger
Addie,
sibling.
Addie may have passed that down.
Hopefully. I mean, if we're doing things the right way, hopefully that word has trickled down from the older kids that dad pushes you. I have to say, you know, you get the question a lot, like, was it more fun to play or coach? And it was definitely more fun to play. You're out there playing and working every muscle. And the next best thing is coaching. And now parenting and going to your kids' games is as good as playing.
Yep.
I feel like I'm playing again. I am more excited for these games than I think the kids are. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, but I am back in that mode of when I played, I didn't think about anything else but the game and scoring a touchdown. My mind was off of everything else that was, you know, wrong with the world or I wish could be different. And I'm back as a parent. I'm back in that mode of playing and so excited. I get to play through the kids again. You know, it's a wonderful feeling.
I always found it was harder to go through those games as a parent than it was as a player. There's more pressure on the parent, I think, than there was on me as a player, if I remember correctly.
The only thing that could disappoint me about these games right now is if they didn't have passion about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
My kids go out and play these games, and it's like, I mean, it brings them to tears if they don't do well. I mean, I like that passion. And it could be anything. It could be if they had a drive and a passion for a sport or music or drawing. My daughter Gracie loves water polo and drawing. You know, Katie's playing the piano now. So, I mean, not a lot of drive. Katie doesn't have a lot of drive yet. But, I mean, isn't that what we all hope for as parents?
Absolutely.
That our kids will have a love and a passion and a drive for something, anything.
Yep.
You know, and then once you see that they have it and you see them practicing and then, okay, now we're going to go to the game. This is really exciting.
It's the culmination of all that work.
They just threw the ball out there, and okay, there's a ball out there.
But the beautiful thing, and I don't know where you get this. I really don't know where you get this, but when you do talk to your kids after a game or after a whatever, you always go one good thing that they did and two good things that they did, and then on about the third thing, you need to shoot it softer off of the backboard. So you always have some positives before you hit him with
the Jack Harbaugh School of Parenting. I have copied it completely. I told Jack when he came off, you played hard. You played.
Rebound. You're a rebound machine.
Yeah. I mean, I went through two good things before I got to the backboard. You can't bang it off the backboard. And you know what, Jack? Let's work more on the left side of the. Is he uncanny with the shot? I mean, if he's left of the basket.
Soft.
It goes soft and
off the back.
He goes to the right of the basket. And boom!
So he's got a hit zone. So you have to work on the other parts of his shot chart.
Yeah.
I did have a question. This is maybe just for, you know, for those that are inclined to root for the team your brother coaches. But I know you coached against for a few years his big new star addition. You have a scouting report for your dad, for your brother, for us Ravens fans about Earl Thomas.
Yeah, he's a tremendous player. Yeah. He really has a nose for the football, as they say, and causing turnovers, gets interceptions, causes fumbles. You know, he's really savvy. I mean, there's guys that play a three deep zone defense, or and they played a lot of zone in Seattle. It'd be a great fit in Baltimore. But I mean, there's some people that go to their spot and stand there like an orange cone. that is not Earl Thomas. I mean, he's helping. He's feeling runners come through his zone. He knows when to slough off a guy and go help somebody else and put himself in a position to make those plays. One of the best in the game.
I was pretty excited about the signing. I assume John was as well.
They were going through a time there where they lost Weddle and they lost Suggs and they lost Smith and Mosley, and they were just dropping. And we were in your office.
Yeah.
I think we were talking to Don Martindale, right? And Don was on. Yeah. He was coming here for a clinic and mentioned to him, what's going on? And then he gave us the
– He equated there was like a sickness, a virus was, this was the, and we got some medicine, we got some cure coming in, you know, it was going in a direction, and then the medicine was coming in.
I'm looking forward
injected
to seeing
with
that
a
medicine.
Shot of and the good players.
And the running back from the
Mark Ingram.
Mark Ingram.
Little Flint, Michigan injection to the Ravens offense too, can hurt there as well. Wanted to ask you about your trip to Cleveland. Heard you had a great event, keynote speaker at the Cleveland event for the NFF, for the National Football Foundation.
Let me say first, I was there, and it was by far, I've seen Coach speak at many different things, many different events in front of many different, by far, his best performance, best speaking. I'm not saying it.
Oh, Matt.
No. I'm not even trying to carry his water right now. I mean it.
No, he's not.
It was incredible. I wish Jack was there. The only thing that would have made it better was seeing Jack's face in it, because he got Jack a couple times just telling some stories and maybe the exaggerations of it would have maybe been a little different if Jack was there. He could have rebutted, but it was awesome. And what was great is he told all the stories, many that he told on here before. But then he went over to do a fireside chat with the host, and it was just off the cuff, and it was incredible. I mean, again, mean it from the as pure as I can mean it.
It was a great crowd. Let's start there. You know, when you're speaking and giving a speech, you know, when you can look out there and have some people nodding their head, and Matt was there, and you know, you're getting positive feedback from somebody. Ben McDaniels and Mike Zordich were there, so I had some good hometown guys there that I could look to and get a nod or positive reaction to. But then there was the high school players. I mean, they're getting award for it was an academic award that they were getting, and to see all the proud parents and grandparents that were there, and coaches. They had coaches from Mount Union and all the state championship coaches, great parents, and high school football players, and a few of the guys from our staff. I was in the home crowd. I mean, I felt like I was in with my people.
Bet you got a feeling football's in a good place in there with coaches like that and parents like that and young people playing the game for all the right reasons. Our game is in a good place.
It sure is. I mean, each coach got up and talked, and you're like, man, thank you. Thank you for being good. Thank you for being a good coach, you know, to our kids, and how lucky we are that there's so many good, dedicated, talented coaches.
My favorite off-the-cuff moment from Coach, and I'm sure he doesn't mind me sharing. So during the fireside chat part, the host was a really good host, had some really good questions, not the typical, like, you know, when you were drafted by the Bears or what's it like to do this, like the all standardized question. He was just really in depth. His brother played against Coach at Dayton. Yeah. He was the running back.
Good running back, too, number 25.
Coach remembered that on spot. So that like threw the host like, oh my God, like smiling ear to ear, loving it. He's up on the edge of his seat, and he's telling this real in-depth question. And I could see Coach staring at him. And at the end of the question, he looks at him and goes, man, you just have a great voice. Like, can you repeat that question? I mean, the audience loses their mind. Like, just, it was such a cool, like, it was just, because he was in the moment, like, I could see him thinking, like, man, this guy's really good, and man, does he have a great voice.
He had a good voice.
Before we wrap up this opening segment, a couple more things. I do have a, I want to get just briefly into the spring ball, a day under your belt. But before we do that, Matt has a had a happy dad, proud dad moment over the past week as well that we want to share. This is something that I think we all can relate to.
Yeah, I wanted to share with you guys that – so my bigger twin, Juliana, I probably should stop referring to her as the bigger twin. The youngest twin, Juliana, there's a little girl in her class that has Down syndrome. And she invited Juliana to the class to her birthday party. And from the last 30 days, every single day, when's her birthday? When's her birthday? When's her birthday? And she could not wait to get there. So, when Lindsay RSVP'd, for the little girl's, birthday, the mom immediately messaged back and went, "Oh my God, thank you so much for RSVPing. Juliana is such a sweet girl to her, loves her. She takes care of her at school. She takes care of her on these field trips. Love that. I can't wait to have her at the party to get to know her a little better." And then as second she, Juliana walks into the party, it's a swimming party. She takes her little cover up off. She walks right over, grabs the girl's hand. They go right into the pool. And it might have been, no, it is the most proud moment I've had as a dad. I mean, I'm 10 years in, I've been proud of Abby, proud of Camilla, proud of Juliana for sports and for doing great in school and being good kids in general. But like, just to see that, that girl's just her friend. Like,
warms the cockles of the heart. Coach,
I mean, I'm telling you.
You'll remember that until they pour dirt over top of you.
There's no doubt about it.
Doesn't get any better than that.
No, it's just, and she's a sweetheart, and I'm just so proud of her. So, thought that was appropriate for the podcast, and trying to take lessons from the great Jack Harbaugh and push them
on. You got great kids, by the way.
Thank you.
Great way.
They love you, Coach. I mean, they're
so sweet. They make me pictures. If ever they're in the office, they'll come in and say hello, and always a hug. Always a hug, whether we're here at the office or after games or anywhere we are. And
thank you.
And they draw beautiful, beautiful artwork.
They could be better at art, but coach is better than me.
Some of the best block M's and football helmets I have seen from any youngster.
You have followed the mantra of our show. You married wisely.
There is no doubt about it. I have outkicked my cover. All of those cliches, I've done them 5 times over, and I know that.
So, Coach, as we wrap things up here, I did want to just briefly ask you, you've had a day under the belt so far. I know, like, some meetings over the weekend and the first day of spring ball is underway. It has happened. How was it to get the guys back out there?
If I had to boil it down to 2 things, they really looked like they were physically in shape for the first day of spring practice. As a whole, as a team, tip-top, really good. And then also just a real good grasp of the schemes, both defensively, offensively, special teams-wise, like way ahead. Like way ahead, like this is good. Not everything right, but really as far along or further along than we've ever been for our first day of spring practice. So many players that have been under the radar, say, and you wonder how they were going to go these last 3.5-4 months. And so many have ascended, you know, and it's been wonderful to work with guys that are just under the radar, hungry, you know, serious about being good. And how are they going to step up, and what are they going to do? And then doing what they're supposed to do, doing it, even when somebody's not looking, they've done that. And then there's guys that are actually doing that and then bringing guys along with them. Ben Bredesen, really noticeable as somebody that's leading. Medalists, another guy. Kristen Turner's had a phenomenal offseason. Unbelievable. Michael Wanyu's had his best offseason. I mean, he's getting through all the conditioning. He's getting through all the practices, not having to stop at any time. He's looking like in so many ways. All our quarterback room is really good. Shea Patterson, the starter. Dylan McCaffrey running number 2 right now. Joe Milton number 3. And I will make this prediction: Shea Patterson will not be able to put his feet up the entire spring practice, because there's guys coming hard and and fast. This McCaffrey and Milton, really, really good. And also BP and Brandon Peters and Cade McNamara are doing extremely well. Offensive line looks as good as it ever has, better. And returning four starters, you'd think that would be the case. You'd anticipate that, but they've ascended. They've gotten better too. It's not just come back and punch the clock these past winter workout sessions. Here's another bright spot is the defensive line. It probably personifies the under the radar guys and where they are taking this and where they've taken it the last 3-4 months. But that group in particular is shining right now. Aiden Hutchinson, really good player. Quiddy Pay, really good player. Carlo Kemp, as another guy who's a leader in bringing guys along, and he came in as an inside backer. We're going to play an inside backer. He'd be a good inside backer, right? And then moved to outside backer, and then put him at defensive end, and then eventually tackle. But so he's at tackle. He has really found the niche. Strong, really strong, and really leading that group in there. And young guys are just popping too. Ojobo and Newberg, Julius Welthkoff, who played no high school football, has got all the talent, mm-hmm. all the traits in there. Ben Mason is going to be playing both ways, and he's fast on the defensive line. That's where we're playing him, and really strong. He's an animal, and who's going to block him? And maybe even the best guy so far, if you looked at one from last season to this season, Donovan Jeter has had a really tremendous off season. The team workouts have been good, and then the practice yesterday. And I see him getting after people, and you know, not only himself, holding himself accountable, and holding other guys accountable. Maybe so far the biggest jump, along with Christian Turner. Now Christian Turner has been a real beast all over.
Yeah, he's been really good
the off season.
And that's just one day in. So looking forward to talking football over the next month or so leading up to the Fan Fest event and then the spring game coming up in April as well. We also want to remind everybody, last week we tweeted out a picture of the 10 Rules, the Harbaugh Way of Life, and asked the question, what do you love about the podcast? What do you want to hear going forward? We're going to keep taking those submissions. And next week on the podcast, we're going to pick a winner and we're going to send them to you. We've had some great responses so far, so keep those tweets coming in. We're going to pick a winner for that next week. But one of the tweets that came in, mixed in there, Coach, as we wrap things up with the response to that tweet from Dennis, who said, it was such an honor to meet the man who invented coaching. Maybe a little extreme there, but he said, it made Michigan football fun again last night at the KISS concert. So how was KISS?
It was loud. It was loud. That was I was taking one for the team there, Ira. That was daughter Addie. She's a metalhead. She's 10 years old, and for some reason she's relates to these 80s bands and 70s bands.
I need to talk to her.
I know. I mean,
if you need a chaperone, I can, and you, especially if you practice, I can handle the some of those louder
venues.
Concerts. Oh, yeah.
Wasn't she an 80s rocker at for Halloween? Did I remember seeing that this
time? Yeah, she's had this KISS shirt for a while now. I think she got asked for it for one of her birthdays and got it, that kind of thing. And,
good for her.
And she was really into it. She knew some of the words. I didn't know any of the words. And then we had a 6 a.m. workout the next day. So I was taking one for the team there. But it was fun. You know, it was her first concert. Her first concert ever. And I was thinking back, you remember pretty much your whole life what your first concert you ever went to was, right?
Yeah, so I know mine.
I was, I remember mine. It was, it was either REO Speedwagon or Fleetwood Mac. I guess I don't exactly remember. They're both at Chrysler Arena. So went there.
We didn't take you to Elvis Presley when he was here back in the middle 70s?
No.
Must not have been able to afford
the ticket
for you.
Laura Spade invited me to Chrysler Arena. We were probably in the eighth grade, and she had tickets there on the floor and everything. And I think REO Speedwagon was the first concert I ever went to.
He kind of lost some pop, I think. I haven't heard much of him lately.
REO Speedwagon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack, what was your first concert?
Was that a joke?
You remember?
Heard him. You know good and well it's a band.
I never
I've never heard of the guy.
Come on.
I swear I've never heard of him.
That's
Speedwagon? He's got a name Speedwagon? Come on. It can't be.
Come on. Now, you've been around this. You're not buying this, are you?
I'm not buying it.
No.
Your first concert.
We had two here in Ann Arbor. Ricky Nelson. He wasn't in a Chrysler. It was kind of like downtown, in a room. It wasn't. He must have been kind of sliding a little bit. But Ricky Nelson and Harriet and the Nelsons and Ricky and David and that show we used to watch all the time. So I remember that was good. And then Elvis Presley. Hmm. I mean, we saw him in Chrysler right before he passed away, probably 2 or 3 months before he passed away. But
Elvis has left the building.
I do recall that.
Your first concert?
TLC, the 90s R&B group. Yes. I can't remember who opened up.
The C of TLC Chili, her brother, listens. He listens to the podcast.
Nice.
Michigan fan.
Hey, bud. I went to your sister's concert back in sometime in the mid to late 90s. And interesting fact, Destiny's Child opened for TLC at that concert. So I saw Beyonce, actually.
Before she was Beyonce.
Yeah. This is weird to talk about out loud, to be honest.
Probably.
There was a guy. There was a guy who was doing paintings at the Kiss concert. So he was the opening act. He was doing these. He did one of Bruce Springsteen, Aretha Franklin, and then he did another one of...
like he painted the music,
of
right?
Of the Detroit statue what's that called? The hands are holding one thing and holding another thing. The fountain. I think it was the fountain downtown. But they did them in like... 15, maybe 10 minutes each one to playing the music, and he's dancing. He's got two brushes going. Wow. He's making. He did Aretha Franklin upside down.
Wow.
Started with it upside down and then flipped it over,
that's
and cool. You could see it was Aretha Franklin.
The spirit of Detroit.
Yep,
the spirit of Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could remember his name. Maybe somebody will think of that.
Car Wagon.
Yeah. Brother.
What
was your first concert, Mackenzie?
My first concert was actually Shania Twain.
Nice.
Wow, 95.
Yeah, who I was obsessed with growing up. And my parents took me, I think it was another hockey tournament thing. I finagled getting dragged to one of my brother's sporting events that they took me to the Shania Twain concert. So I feel good about that. You know, it wasn't like Taylor Swift or something. I feel good about Shania Twain.
I thought you were going to say it wasn't TLC. I thought that was what you were about to say right there.
I actually would have loved to go to that. So.
That painter's name is David Garibaldi?
There it is, Garibaldi. Yep.
All right, to wrap it up, I'll just
mention. Fantastic.
Because I don't remember which one came first, but my parents took us. We had floor seats at the old Capitol Center in D.C. for Neil Diamond and Barry Manilow. Ooh. Those were my first two.
Oh, two good ones.
Those are my first two. I don't remember which one was first, though.
Big.
Those are my first two.
Wow. Mom's seen Barry Diamond. Neil Diamond, right?
We must have been.
She has a record of him. I know
we
that.
We must have only been able to afford one ticket because she didn't take me.
Or it was during football season.
She did, but she didn't take me.
Sarah may have sold a house to Barry Manilow.
Oh, nice.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, when she was a realtor.
I don't remember the concerts, but I remember being a kid that I was definitely there. I've been told that I was there. So those are the first two. Looking forward to continuing our Lucky Sports Parent series. We're going to get to that next here with Mike Morris, dad of Mike Morris, here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes you to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there are no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
It's now time for our Lucky Sports Parents feature with Mike Morris, dad of Mike Morris, here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Gentlemen, how's everything?
Everything's great.
This is Jack Harbaugh. So, hey, good to have you on the show.
I tell you, I don't think I can do it, send you all some of this 82-degree weather.
Oh, we would
love
that.
Some of that 82-degree weather.
Good news for us today, Mike. We got sunshine out. It may be in the high 30s, but
we're gonna get the 40
anytime today. We get sunshine in Michigan this time of year, I mean, we are elated.
Oh, I tell you now, we got, you know, the disadvantage. We actually got a cold front coming through. We'll be here tonight or tomorrow with highs in the around 68. So, you know, there's people bringing out the winter attire.
We had a couple 50-degree days the last week, Mike, and then I saw on Sarah, somebody texted her one of those funny videos or whatever. She found it somewhere.
A meme?
The whole thing is there's a guy driving in his car. It's March 17th, and they show the car 47 degrees. And he's like singing. He's taking off his coat. He's throwing it in the back seat, rolling down the windows. Yay! It's spring. It's 47 degrees. And then it cuts to same guy. Same car. He's all bundled up in a winter jacket with the hood on. And it says October 17th, 47 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe it's winter already. And it's cold and I'm freezing. And that was funny. It's so true. Really
no, it's so
true.
Unbelievable.
When you go to the NFL, you don't pick where you get drafted, right? And you're going to play cold weather games. So might as well come north to go to a great school like Michigan and get your plays of football.
Oh, I hear you. And plus two, man, when you're surrounded by good people, man, you're willing to make some changes.
And it warms the heart.
Good. Change is good. You know, it helps you mature.
How's everything going for you? Got everything everything under control down there in South Florida?
Well, you know, the last thing you want to hear in the law enforcement world is business is good. I can tell you now we're not laying anybody off.
Yeah.
If anything, we're doing some hiring, but it's steady. You know, I hate the what's going on in the world right now because that does play a major role in our preparation and all that. And, you know, for you know, American and United States citizens. You know,
how long have you been in the police business?
Oh, this is year 27.
Wow. How did you choose that profession? How did that come about?
Well, it was supposed to have been temporary. You know, it was my senior year. They had me as the number one offensive guard in the nation, and I broke my leg right at the top of the foot my senior year going into the senior season. As a matter of fact, my first game back was against Michigan in 91, and they labeled me injury prone. So after I came back for the All-Star game and nobody would draft me, I ended up getting a free agent shot with Atlanta, and I said, I need a backup plan. And one of the boosters picked me up, and I went and met the sheriff. And I heard what happened about the injuries, and he said, don't worry, Mike, I'm going to hire you. And that was my first stint in law enforcement, and it was supposed to be temporary because I was trying to get back in shape, and he allowed me to work out and to try to give the NFL a go, and got hurt chasing a guy one night, and I had to have another ankle surgery.
Oh, wow.
And doctor said, Mike, if you want to walk on your 35, you need to let it go. And that's 27 years ago. And I didn't know that, you know, I would have stayed this long. But, you know, I got a story to tell to a lot of young men, especially who have to, you know, it's about life of where you come from, what you can be, just given the opportunity. So now as an authoritarian, you may not want to hear my message, but I can make you stay there and listen. It actually, this was my calling, you know, I didn't even know it myself, you know.
And Mike has trained a lot of guys. I mean,
yeah.
Coached him in the Little League, and Ray McDonald was one that came from Mike's program, and also wife Melanie, principal. You've been a team of developing and inspiring youth for those 27 years, in my opinion.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the TV station here did a documentary on us. I want to say almost 15 years ago, and at that time, 15 years ago, I think we've gotten over 300 or 400 kids into college. Mm. Academically, and I focus on athletics. She focuses on academics. We have a happy median because there's, you know, athletics needs a certain GPA, academics needs a certain GPA to get in college. So, and And that was 15 years ago with 400 kids. It's been a blessing, man. It's been a blessing.
It's amazing to me as the proactive things that you're speaking about. So many times I think we as out in the world, we look at police work as, you know, as you say, chasing people or investigating and doing all those kinds of things. But, you know, talk to us a little bit about the proactive with the young people and trying to avoid them taking a path that would lead them to that latter stage.
When somebody calls 911, they're not inviting me for lunch. You know, they're not saying dinner's ready. So you see the behind the scenes, so to speak, just like in coaching, you know, you see the final product on the field, but that people don't understand what goes in on and during practices and stuff and recruiting and everything else. So I see the issue, the primary issue, you know, whether it's the father not there or it's the drugs in the household or somebody addicted to something or just that young parent. So in law enforcement, you know, we have evolved to not just fight crime, but you know, the whole thing in law enforcement is to fight, deter, stop recidivism, you know, the repeat offenders. And so if you care about your job, you also want to attack the problem because I don't want her to come back. And so now you find yourself being the social worker, the law enforcement, the investigator. Then, you know, most of the kids call my wife and I uncle and auntie. So, you know, then now they became, you know, become a extended part of your family. Matter of fact, it was so funny. Last night I'm in Belgrade, talking with some people and, Travis Benjamin played at UM and has, you know, just got that new nice contract in NFL. And he was like, he told my wife, where's Uncle Mike at? You don't know the impact you have on people right away. And it's fulfilling for us is when that kid 5 years from now, 10 years from now, come back and say, thank you. You know, when I've helped and my wife and I helped these kids get in the NFL, the only thing I've ever asked and we've both asked, we don't want any money. Come back and speak to the next group of kids that we're helping, because you remember you were in that 15 passenger van when we were traveling all over the United States. Now we have a new group of kids. Expose them to what you had to do to make it. And see, and that's all the thing we asked for. So in law enforcement, oh man, you know, it's you're a coach, you're a cheerleader, you know, you're everything.
There's no doubt you're about everything. It. I was going to just jump in my mind too is earlier on the podcast, we did an opening here and we were talking about pushing your kids, you know, and that's what we're here for. We're here as parents. I mean, that's what our job is. We're supposed to push them. And one thing I remember you telling me, and I don't ever bring up the names, you know, you kind of don't, you leave the name out to protect the innocent. But, there was a young man who was a very high profile player that started with you in the vans and going around and went off and had a wonderful college career, was a first round draft pick and came back and you told him, you shot him straight. There's some things in his life that you didn't like the way he was doing. And because Mike's not, he's not out for money. He's not out for what, just like he said, he wants them to come back and pay it forward with the next generation. But where a lot of people, a guy makes it, he comes back. I mean, you're kissing their hind end, you know, that kind of thing. But that's somebody you've maintained that as a dad. And we were talking. And a father figure and a coach figure. Same topic we were on earlier in the podcast is somebody's got to be in their life. Somebody's got to believe in them. Somebody's got to love them. But somebody's got to push them too.
Believe in him enough that he will push them.
Believe in him enough to push them. Right. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, what's sad and what we find out in law enforcement is that when there's that absentee father, and we find out that a lot of these kids act out and they just want somebody in their life, you know, and you have to also step back a little. I'll give you one example in which I still think about today and it brings me to tears. There was a young man in Belgrade. I was volunteering at the Boys and Girls Club speaking to kids and I would go over there about 4 days a week. And a mother sees my car and she comes out and said, she didn't know me. But she knew my wife. She said, "Officer, I need some help." I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "My son flipping tables in the classroom and the teachers are scared to death of him." So I'm like, okay, this kid, 16, 17, pretty big. Everybody's scared of him. I said, okay, where's he at? What grade is he in? He's in third grade. I said, third grade? You know, I said, I'm firm but fair. And one thing is, you know, with me, and I was raised, you will be respectful as a kid. And I said, where's he at? And so I took off my belt, had my police belt on. I took my belt off. And I said, Mama, wait outside. And I went in that apartment and wore him out. I beat the brakes off that kid. And absent father, and his father was in the NFL, which I didn't understand. Absent father, and they lived in the projects. So the next day I pull up, that kid is waiting for me at the Boys and Girls Club. He just wanted somebody to care about him and be that authoritarian. See, a lot of parents want to be friends. You know, you can't be a kid's friend. You know, be the parent. And that kid wanted some structure in his life. And I kid you not, that kid, every single day for the next 2 years, waited for me diligently at that Boys and Girls Club. Next thing you know, I become, and he called, you know, telling everybody I'm his dad. And he's staying the weekends at the house. And, you know, and sometimes in life, I don't care how much you try to help. It's going to be that one of those two kids that no matter what you do, it's not going to work. And I remember I said, listen, and I lived to death and everybody knew he was my kid. Matter of fact, my wife would ride through where he lived at by the projects, catch him gambling. And she said, I'm going to go tell Big Mike. He would say, please don't tell Dad. Please don't tell him. I'm sorry. I won't do it again. And I told him, I said, if you can do one semester of school, because he always got kicked out for behavior, a student. But kicked out for behavior. I said, you do one semester in school, I'll adopt you. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was during the summer. Oh, man, he didn't make it one day in public school.
Golly.
And they got kicked out the first day touching on girls. And I said, you know me, man. I got a daughter. I said, you know, I would hurt you if you touched my daughter. You stay at my house all the time. And now you got me thinking, you know, what you thinking about when you're at my house? So I started to back up. I said, you know what? You can't stay all the time. I said, but I'm going to still be there for you, but you can't stay until you improve your behavior. Well, then at that point, it went downhill. Matter of fact, if you remember, let's go back some years ago, CNN, ESPN, and all that talked about it. There was a superstar football player out of Pahokee. And at this point, this kid just was out there. The superstar kid in Pahokee went to a party. The same kid that I was going to adopt walked up behind him, shot him in the head, and stole his chain.
Oh.
And so I asked myself to this day, and matter of fact, he was hiding out in the project. Nobody could find him. And when they came down with the indictment, they called me and said, Judge, you signed the paperwork. I said, you know what? They're going, you know, you get in a confrontation with law enforcement, especially in today's time, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get shot. You ain't going to make it. So I went and looked for him, found him, put him in the car, took him to the station. And they came down with the indictment. And I said, I can't put handcuffs on him because I still love him. So they put the handcuffs on him and I left. And I tell my wife all the time, I said, what if I would have, you know, kept him around, you know, even though I would have put my own kids, my daughter in jeopardy or my son in jeopardy because of his behavior, because he didn't want to change no matter how many positive people you put around them. And my wife had to tell me that. She said, Mike, don't look at the ones that fell through the crack. Look at the ones that we did help and the ones that we still can help. And so at the end of the day, you know, you're not going to be, win 15 games that season and win the national championship, but you're going to still be victorious. And at the end of the day, it's how many of those young men you led say thank you, and you change their life. And so that's the approach I have to take and still take, you know, because still thinking about that incident bothers me. You know, could I, you know, save that kid? But in reality, you know, you can't save everybody.
Mike, this is Jack Harbaugh. I was in coaching 46 years, and as you were telling that story, it brought back so many memories of those youngsters that you got to the point where you had to call them into your office and you had to tell them that you were letting them go, and the feelings that I had that you have just shared that I had during those moments. And the way I always looked at it was there's like 95, 100, you know, guys in the next room. And, you know, we had reached a point where for the good of those youngsters, you know, this youngster had to be cut away from your team. And Boy, I have great emotion just listening to you tell that story.
I tell you, it's sad, but you got to focus on the good you're doing in people's lives, and that keeps you going. Because if you continue to think about the one you lost, you don't want to take a chance on giving that another kid an opportunity to be a part of your life. Because not only do you change them, they change you. That's the greatness of it. You know, football ups and downs, life ups and downs, but then it all makes us better.
You're listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Make sure to stick around after this podcast to get the latest headlines from the AP News Minute.
If you like our show, you're going to love the Dan Patrick Show on Podcast One. Join the all-star sportscaster for all the excitement of March Madness as he breaks down all the plays and predicts the outcomes in this year's NCAA tournament. Download the Dan Patrick Show every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
It's our Lucky Sports Parents feature with Mike Morris here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Although I kind of want to rename the feature to the Lucky Sports Parents of Lucky Sports Kids. Because what I've learned each and every week of doing these, Coach, is that these parents, and you hear, again, this is a father, son, you know, a father, wife, you know, husband, wife team with that we're talking about Mike in a moment. But we've had parents, fathers, moms, et cetera, that are just terrific people that are also raising these great kids. So the kids are pretty lucky, too.
No, there's no doubt about it. Like my dad, when I listen to you talk, Mike, so many things come rushing back to me that, you know, where I got the same exact perspective as you do as a college coach. I mean, I really strive to treat the players just like I treat my own kids and treat my own kids just like I do the players. And with the one difference, I guess, when you know they're your blood, you know, they're your own child. I mean, it's an unconditional love that remains throughout their lives. And players, there's some conditions to get treated like that beloved son. I mean, you gotta do right. You do get second chances, and you get third chances, and sometimes even a fourth chance. Now, after about a fourth chance, you know, like four quarters in a football game or three strikes in baseball, I mean, you know, there comes a point where, you know, you're not doing what they have to do. I say it like this, like, you give us respect and we will give that respect back to you and then some.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Give us grief, you're going to know what hits you. Same way you treat your own kids, the same way you treat the players. And the same way you teach the players, you treat your own kids. And nobody's done it better than you. I mean, I look back, you've got Milan, who's at BC playing basketball, and now young Mike, who's coming to Michigan playing football and excelling, not just doing well in the classroom. We're talking the 3.8, 3.89, 4.0 type of student. And you guys have done a tremendous, tremendous job. Tell us about Mike.
I think you're doing pretty good. Matter of fact, I gotta get you a copy so you can blackmail him. He's in a couple plays, and he just finished one. You know what? It shocked me. I didn't know he was gonna be that good as an actor. I had snot coming out my nose, and I was crying and laughing so hard because he was like the comic relief. And they did a remake of the movie of the play Odd Couple.
Ooh.
Oh. But it was written from a female version. And so when I say hilarious, I was shocked. I looked, because I remember, Coach, you had jokes, man, Mike, you know, we never had a football player in the theater. and I said to myself, obviously they never seen Mike. I said, Mike, he got the look, got the blue eye, and you talking about
got the voice, yeah. Got the presence. Thank you for that's the first thing you started saying was like the first time we met and we had the meeting, you, Melanie, myself, I said, theater. This guy should be a theater major.
Yeah.
I mean, we
yeah.
got the number one theater music acting program in the entire country. Numero uno. My son's in it.
He's a director.
He's in as a director, you know. So let's get him trying out for the theater.
I mean,
it's making sense. Now it's making sense to everybody. I love it.
And right now he's one of the leading roles in Hairspray. They got Hairspray coming up.
I love it. I think it'd be
like
unbelievable.
It shocked me. I didn't know he's gonna be that good. I went over there, got my head down, let me sit in the back, make sure nobody sees me as a parent. You know, because you know you want your kid to do good. But he's like, okay, yeah. But then I was like, oh my goodness, yeah. I didn't know he was that darn good. And then every parent, everybody in the auditorium, in the facility, you know, went up to him and they were like, wow. And I was shocked.
Let's go. Get them up here. We'll get them in, get them some of those plays. They got student plays that they do the first year, and then he can try out to get into the theater school. I mean, it'd be amazing. That'd be our first football player in the theater school. I think it'd be absolutely amazing. Let's do it.
It would be interesting.
Not as dumb as people say I am. I got the eye.
There's a rumor out there. Huh? Mike, how'd you meet your wife, Melanie?
You know what? I was a police officer in Tallahassee, and it's so funny. I kind of say I'm a handsome guy. But
I'll say it too for you, Mike. You're a handsome guy.
I was a bike cop at the time, and she was up there getting her master's degree. Her niece was with her at the time, and she stopped the car, had a niece get out the car and tell me to come over there. She wanted to talk to me. We exchanged phone numbers and been married ever since.
And children? Tell us about your children.
My daughter, one thing, you find in sports, man, a lot of parents live their dream through their kids. That's one thing I told Mike. I said, man, you trying to get to where I've been. I said, I made them play, both of them. I said, pick two sports. You make the commitment. I make the commitment to get you there. If I don't coach the team, I said, I'll train you. And I did it twofold. And they didn't understand why at the time. Because if you're busy in sports, by the time we get home and after training, you're going to be so tired, you're not going to get on the internet. You're not going to want to get on your phone. So you're not going to have time for social media. And especially with sports, you got to have the academic requirement too. You're lower than this particular 3-point-some GPA, you can't play. So you pick two. I made them two. And you kind of steer them into I steered them into the sport because I wanted whatever two sports you pick, both of them would have the same basis of athleticism. Both will start with footwork. So one will be my daughter wanted flag football. Okay, cool. Okay, she can get a conditioning in, but also two, it'll help her with her footwork. Then she chose softball. And a lot of people don't know, she was top 10 in the nation as a softball player. And then she said, Dad, I'm going to try for basketball. I said, well, thank you, because that's air conditioned, and I like that. Because it's summertime here, humidity 100%, 100%, man, that's torture. With three games a day, that's torture. And basketball, and then same thing with my son, baseball and football. And, and they'll tell me, Dad, I want to be good. I say, you're going to be good, you want to be great. You know, if you want to be great, you're going to hate whoever's training you because they're going to get you there. And I said, listen, if you want it, if you're serious about it, I said, you're going to hate me. Dad, I want to be good. Okay. Well, they hated me. but end of the day, my daughter got player of the year for the state of Florida. And then it was so crazy. And I tell people this, she turned down Harvard, Yale, Princeton. And the girl finished with a 5.79 GPA. And and we let her choose her own college. And Boston College, a lot of D1s offered her. And so she chose Boston College, not because of a great basketball program, because, sports is somewhat secondary. It was the fact that it was harder to get into Boston College than it is to Yale, the academic requirement and the testing. Mm. And she said, I wanted to play against good competition. And so she chose Boston College because they're in the ACC, get to play the Dukes, get to play the North Carolinas. And it worked out. Ended up being an ACC freshman All-American her first year, broke the scoring record, a 3-point record and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But the second year, sometimes you have to go through something in life to grow. Everything came easy for her. So they end up getting rid of the coach and brought in a new coach. So now she has new trials and tribulations and another test of faith. And she doesn't fit the coach's offense. So now it's like a rude awakening. Now you have to reinvent yourself to keep the team to go forward. And so I love it. I love the fact that she's getting challenged now. I love that fact, because life is going to give you a whole bunch of challenges. Some things you're not going to know what to do, and you're going to have to fall down. And it's not about what happens when you fall down. It's all about what happens when you get up. Still had a good year. They unfortunately lost in the ACC tournament. And matter of fact, just flew back last week from spring break. And same thing with Lil Mike. I said, you know, I told him, I said, man, you're going to, if you want to be great, you're going to hate me. Even for Lil Lee, Mike, when Mike was five, because he was so big, he had to play with the 8 and 9 year olds. And the 8 and 9 year olds were scared of him. Parents used to get on me when I coached the practice. And you had that one parent that said, my kid should be starting. He's 10 years old. I said, okay. I said, Mike, you're six. Line up in front of that 10-year-old kid. And Mike would put him down, that 10-year-old kid start crying. And I said, Mom, I said, please let us coach. You know, we're going to put your kid in the best position. But I just wanted to show you, he's not ready for football. So, you know, that was just a way of a coach getting back at that one parent who I was talking.
Well, it's just a segue of this a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Jim again. I didn't want to feel like I'm cutting you off there, but keep pushing him, because I know we had a couple of starters that graduated at that defensive end position, but so far through winter conditioning and in spring ball, some guys have really stepped up. The Quiddy Pay at the defensive end, and Aiden Hutchinson at the defensive end, and there's some guys coming along. David Ajobo, who's in here right now, is a mid-year, so Julius Welskoff, a bevy of guys are really doing good. I think you're going to love this, too, because this is going to really help Mike. Sean New, our defensive line coach now. I mean, he's got
I missed the opportunity to meet him when Don Brown, Coach Brown, brought him down.
He's really got these guys running up front. I mean, they are running. I'm not saying sideline to sideline, but, I mean, it's midfield to sideline. It's numbers to numbers, really putting an emphasis on speed and running from the defensive end position. I know that'll be a strength of Mike. So keep pushing him. Can't wait to get him here.
Oh, I tell you, he's itching to come. I can tell you that.
All right, before we let you go, Mike, question we asked all the lucky sports parents here on the podcast. As Mike, who originally had been a Florida State commit, which is your alma mater, he came up for a visit early in September this past season. And he decided to make a commitment to Michigan. What led his decision to become a Michigan Wolverine?
Oh, I tell you, it's people, man. I raised my kids to, end of the day, the decision is going to be you. I'm not sleeping in the dorm. And the dorms have changed from 1987 to, you know, 2019. I said, it's going to be your decision. I guide you along the way. And so we taught our kids to you seek good people. And my dream was, you know, it might be the captain at Florida State. And then I'm the honorary captain right beside him. We're on the 50-yard line. That was one of my dreams. But then, and like I told Coach, I took Mike to Michigan to show him why I flipped the bill. I wanted to show him why he shouldn't come. And I could not find that even to the equipment manager, the guy passing out the cleats. It's nothing but a bunch of good people in Michigan. And when Mike was always on my back, Daddy, we got to take a visit. You got to take me. They got to. Now you'll love these coaches. And I said, man, coach is a coach, man. You know what I'm And, but when I took him there, hell, I'll tell my wife, I said, babe, I think I got one more play of eligibility. Maybe, you know, as long as it's a TV timeout, I can get on the field. You know, so I couldn't find anything negative. It exceeded my expectations. And as a dad, you want your kid to be around great men because you want your kid to be better off in 2 or 3 years than he was when he left.
Great.
And so, and that's what I'm more proud of than anything, is that I can see my son maturing into a great man, leaving here a great young man, but becoming a better man. And see, and I'm content. And for the Michigan fans, I traded him a garnet gold. I'm go blue.
Well, hey, Mike, this is Jim. Feeling is mutual. And I remember, of course, I loved Mike, you know, from the moment I met him. And he comes in with the transcript that, I mean, it's got A's all over it. And then He walks through a door, and he literally fills the entire door. Not the width of the door, the height of the door, and it gives you a great handshake and looks you in the eye. But as much as I liked Mike, you and Melanie were two of my favorite people, parents that I've ever recruited. I remember that first meeting. I mean, it was supposed to be a 15-minute meeting. Yeah. I remember Matt Dudek saying, hey, you know, you got 15 minutes here. And that conversation, that sit down, went 2 hours.
Yeah,
and,
every bit of two.
And it felt like it was 15 minutes, but it went 2 hours. I mean, just you know, Dad, like you just eye to eye with a parent. You're connected.
Engaged.
He played. I played. And just philosophy of raising kids. And I'm, you know, you feel like you're, you know, just in lockstep all the way. That's the way I felt about that visit and then the several that we had afterwards as well.
I'll tell you, Coach Atkinson, I'm appreciative. I'm thankful. And, you know, and like I told you before, you do the same. And I believe in putting foot to butt. So you continue on that tradition for me. I would highly appreciate it. But like I said, you're getting a young man, and I don't brag about my kids. Just get mad at me, Daddy. How come you don't? You know, you're always putting us down. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I don't brag on you all because I want you to get the big head. I can honestly say this. I'm looking forward because I'm kind of scared to see what he's going to be one day. You know, because he's never been pushed. And when he was 5 years old, he had to play with the 10-year-olds. And when he was 6 and 7, he had to play with the 11 and 12-year-olds. High school was so easy. And the only time we played against great competition was unfortunately to the playoffs. So then he's going against the 6'5", the 6'7", 300-pound lineman. And I say, okay. I said, imagine now you're going against quality athletes every day. I'm looking forward to see the maturity, the growth, as a man, but also too athletically, because I want to see him get pushed and see what you know God has in store for him. Because you're getting a surprise, I can tell you that. You know, you're going to get a surprise, man. Yeah, everybody's going to be shocked. Everybody, you know, because you got a kid that's coming, that's hungry, and because he's been told you only got offers because you're dad. So that's why you'll see on his Twitter sometimes he'll say
that was just like me. People used to tell me that when I was in high school.
You only got offers
because you're dead. I'll tell you what, that's a good one. That motivates you too.
It does. And see, people say, "Oh man, you're only getting offers in ninth grade because you're dad." I said, "No, because he's 6'5", 230 in ninth grade and had 13, 14 sacks and 90 tackles and a bunch of touchdowns. You know, the tight end." I said, "The film speaks for itself. That's one thing. Film can't lie."
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, so you know, I can say I'm he's hungry, man. You know, everybody keeps telling him, man, be as good as your daddy. I'm like, no, he's better than me.
Well, but, I'm happy to take the baton and run with it. And it's easy when they've come from a home where they've been loved and they've been believed in and they've been nurtured and pushed. It makes it a heck of a lot easier for me as a coach to you know, just continue that and return him the fine young man that you and Melanie have raised. And we'll continue to motivate him and push him. And I found that you don't have to motivate the ones that are already motivated. And those are the best kind.
You're right. Especially those who got something to prove, man. That's a good thing.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your time.
Hey, gentlemen, be safe. And I got some warm temperatures in the mail for you, all right?
All right. Tell Melanie we said hello.
Thanks, Big Mike.
Hey, not a problem.
Thank you, Mike.
Safe up there now.
Coming up next, Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
It's now time for everybody's favorite segment of the week here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. It's time for Jack Talk. What do you have for us this week, Jack?
You know, this is kind of off the wall, but I've got to share this with you. I mean, I just been waiting for this moment of our podcast where I could share this. It's been coming on for a couple weeks. Number one, why in the world do we have to wash towels? I can't grasp that. You know, you got a towel, you're in the shower, you the water comes flowing over here and all the whatever is down the drain. Then you soap yourself up and you have this body soap or stuff that you use, and your body is just as clean as it can possibly be. Then you step out of the shower and you use a towel. What possibly could soil a towel when you're crystal clean like that? Would someone explain that to me?
No, I've never thought about that. It probably goes up along with the why do you drive on a parkway and park on a driveway question, because we don't have an answer to that either. Maybe because the towels get wet and there could be like a mildewy thing if too much residual. But the towel dries, right? You hang dry.
Yeah, you don't
and you reuse it. So, but they do eventually, they start to not feel or smell as fresh. So, but I mean, they're not clean, but they're just not as fresh. So maybe we just want the freshness.
Maybe that's, now here's the other one. Back when I was starting out, you know, I just started to shave, you know, you had this little fuzz on your face and you felt it was time, right? And you took out a razor, a Gillette razor, the old Gillette, you put a little blade and then you screw it in and the top folded over and you shave and cut your face off. I mean, you're bleeding. I mean, it's happily dripping down. There's so many blood marks on your face. And then eventually you get pretty good at it. I mean, you could go up and you could go down. You can go around and you got a nice shave. Then these electric razors came. A Norelco, mm-hmm. Remember? And these, why didn't they catch on more?
They don't shave. They don't give you a perfect clean shave.
I can tell you.
Oh, I can tell you without question. That one I can tell you, because now I don't go to the perfect clean shave.
I'm looking at you right now, and I don't. This discussion may not be appropriate for what we're talking about.
The last time I was clean shaven, perfectly clean shaven, was my first marriage. So we'll move on from that. But and I'll go to the goatee, but I won't even go, like, the cheeks won't go full smooth down, because it would have to be a straight razor. It would have to be a regular razor. If I do an electric of any kind, there's still stubble. It will not get perfect. It just can't. I don't know why it can't. But even now, like, you can use like a one blade razor or a two blade. There's only certain razors I have that will get all the spots anyway. Otherwise, you still feel like you have like random stuff on your face. So yeah, I've never been a big fan of like the Norelcos, like the three ones that you see. Like, they just never seem to give me a perfect shave.
How, explain to me, we can put a man on the moon? We can speak to someone that's little robots on Mars, and we can't develop a razor that's got a motor?
Well, I'll say that the first two things you were talking about did involve Michigan men, so maybe we need to get a Michigan person on this Norelco thing, on this razor thing, and might be the answer to your problems.
One last thing. Now we've bathed and we've shaved, and now we're brushing our teeth. This morning, I'm brushing my teeth, and I wonder, and this might be one of those things that people might want to podcast respond to. Do we brush our teeth exactly the same way every single day? I mean, do we go up and across?
No chance. No chance. I change it every day.
On purpose?
No, I just kidding.
I'm here to tell you,
on purpose.
I think you do it the same way every single day. I think that's a habit. We talk about habits, good habits, bad habits.
I don't think I'm going to like chart this.
McKenzie, jump in.
I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to chart this.
Demonstrate how I,
yeah,
I'm like.
Daughter of a dentist. Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on, no pressure.
My dad is a dentist. But all he tells us is that it's much more important to brush at night than in the morning.
Ooh, I'm not good at that.
So at night when you're sleeping, that's where all that plaque.
I want you to know,
ridiculous.
Of all the things we've talked about on the podcast, I think that's the most important thing that we've discussed. Because I wish I did that.
So when you need to brush your teeth at night, because when you're sleeping, that's when the plaque is like festering. And then when you in the morning, people brush just for the breath, really, because you have, you know, your morning breath and whatnot.
It's kind of me.
But it's not as important in the morning as it is at night. So when in doubt, brushing twice, you should brush morning and night. But if you are only picking one, pick the night, because that's the most important.
Why do we use that floss stuff? Is that good?
So that's where like plaque and stuff will build up between your teeth. I'm bad about flossing. I need to be better. It also builds stronger gums. So when people have like red and inflamed gums, it's because they're not flossing. Because when you floss, it helps, you know, build those strong gums, but also get that junk out that's between your teeth. That also causes like bad breath and stuff like that. But I do have an answer to your towel question too. So I was just doing some research. Apparently, when your towels are wet, it's like a breeding ground for for bacteria. So they can have yeast, mold, and E. coli growing on them.
Wash them daily.
without you even knowing it. So that regular washing prevents the bacteria from growing. Because that damp environment is like the breeding ground for bacteria. So that they say you should wash your towels every 4 times you use them. So they don't say, they don't go by days, they go by times because they figure.
So hopefully it's about every 4 days, not every 4 weeks.
Right,
so that's 4
exactly.
times using it.
I'm glad we brought that up. There's one other thing here quickly. I was going through the ball games on Saturday and I ran into Bowling Green State University playing against Buffalo. Buffalo, I think, is a 6th seed.
They're real good.
And
the Bulls are
Green
real good.
Were really playing well. And
they were giving them a game. I watched a lot of that game.
Had them down for a while, and then eventually they
Buffalo pulled out in the second half.
They lost, and I'm reminded of they mentioned that Bowling Green had not been to an NCAA tournament since 1968. And I flash back. 1968 was my first year as an assistant football coach at Bowling Green under Don Nealon. He was the head coach. Joni was born in August of 1968 in the Wood County Hospital. And I'm thinking back.
So basically in her lifetime, since she was born at that hospital, they have not made it to the NCAA tournament.
That's my point. And it was staggering to think about that. But then remembering Jack in my time at Bowling Green from 1957 to 1961, we had an outstanding basketball team. Three of the great players at Bowling Green all played during that era. One was Jimmy Darrow, point guy, 52 points in 2 games in 1960, one against Toledo, where George Patterson, grandfather of Shea Patterson, was the starting center for Toledo. Jimmy Darrow put 52 points on him.
And no 3-point line and no shot clock.
And he very seldom ever shot a foul shot. So he wasn't a drive guy. I mean, he only shot like 150 foul shots in an entire season. So they were all in around where the 3-point range is. He had 22 field goals in that game. Can you imagine? Most people, if you shoot them 22 times, I mean, they're ready to pull you out. But a great story of that game in 1960. At the game, Jackie was a cheerleader. About 20 minutes before the game, the lights went out. It was totally dark in the gym except for some auxiliary lights. Scoreboard was out. They held the game up for about a half hour, 45 minutes, trying to figure out what was wrong. Couldn't figure out, so they played the game. And they had to show the score. They would hold up a piece of paper at timeouts and like boxing matches where the gal walks around with the card, letting know what round, like you don't know what round it is. I mean, come on. But they'd hold up the score, and that's the way it went. He scored 52 points. It was an overtime, and Bowling Green won the game. Jimmy Darrow got 52 points. But the story is, I can tell this story now, statute of limitations may run out, but we had a friend of ours and a football player on our team. His wife was also a cheerleader with Jackie. And before the game, he got a little upset, you know, that she was a cheerleader and all that. So he ran into another friend and they decided what they were going to do. So the story is told. Now, I have no idea whether this is true or not, but this is the story that he told, is that they decided his friend was on the track team. According to him, he threw the javelin. But I don't even think we had the javelin at Bowling Green at the time, so I have no idea. But he said he took a javelin and threw it and knocked out the transistor at the arena. And that's what darkened the arena. And he went for pretty much a lifetime without sharing that story. And finally, that story has been shared. So we could do some research on that and find out what the truth of that particular story might be.
So was he throwing a javelin anywhere near the Superdome a few years ago during the Super Bowl?
That's a great point. I know the guy that had the javelin had passed before the Super Bowl, and I don't think this guy that I know could throw a javelin from here to that wall. So there might be no credence to that particular story.
I have some ties to the Buffalo team to a really good friend of mine who's passed is friends with the head coach, Nate Oates, who's a Romulus guy, the head coach of Buffalo. But as I was watching the game, and obviously I'm rooting for Nate, I want his team to do well. He's got some guys, local guys on his team. But they kept bringing up the 1968 and it's Bowling Green. So I was pulling for your squad, Jack. I was pulling for the Falcons, and I figured if they had won, we'd do a, you know, Ziggy Zumba or two here on the show today.
And one quick last point. Also on that team with Jimmy Darrow, I believe he was either a freshman then or a sophomore, was Nate Thurman. He was a big 6'11 guy, tall, skinny guy at Bowling Green. Went on to be a great pro. Mm-hmm. He's in the Pro Hall of Fame. Might have played on the same team with Wilt Chamberlain back with the Golden State Warriors. Lived in San Francisco, and when Jim was coaching the San Francisco 49ers, Nate was in town, and he did a couple TV shows, and one of them was a chef. He was a chef, and they had food, about a half hour of a food show on there, and I used to watch it every time, not so much that I was interested in being a chef, but that I enjoyed seeing Nate again. And since then, he has passed and might have played with the Cleveland Cavaliers, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
He played. He is from Akron, Ohio, went to Bowling Green. He was a 1963 first-round pick, third overall. He played with the Warriors, the Bulls, for a couple of years, mainly with the Warriors. Also did play a season, as you said, with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And here's the stat. Now, that's why I wanted to pull it, because I knew that there was an amazing stat about him. But he was the first player in NBA history to record an official quadruple-double. So that's blocks, rebounds, assists, and rebounds, assists, blocks, and points. And he also, in 1965, he grabbed 42 rebounds in a game. Nate Thurman did. 42 rebounds in a game. Most teams don't get 42 rebounds in a game.
And I did a little research as well. At Bowling Green against Mississippi State, at Bowling Green Memorial Gym, he had 31 rebounds.
Wow.
In a college basketball game, which is still, of course, a Bowling Green record.
Yeah, he was first team All-American in 1963. Learning a little bit about Bowling Green here on Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
There's one other guy I want to bring up. Let me see if I can find Al Bianchi.
I know the name.
He's a Bowling Green guy.
Okay.
He played in the early 50s, went on to play a long time with the Knicks, and might have been in their front office, general manager, had a very high front office job with the Knicks. He had a record at Bowling Green State University. He was thrown out of 14 basketball games.
That's a record, too. That's a record, too,
for
right?
For some reason, all those 31 rebounds and 52 points, for some reason, I'm pulled toward
the
Al Bianchi with his four, or I think it was 12 or 14 ejections.
And that is a record that will never be broken. Great stuff. Jack is always here on Jack Talk. A reminder, you can contact us on Twitter at AED Podcast or by using hashtag Jack Talk. Follow us, favorite us, and subscribe to us on PodcastOne.com and the Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We want to thank our guest, Mike Morris. We want to thank Podcast One and our great sponsor, TrueCar. And of course, as we say every week, have a great week and keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.